The Place to Be podcast is now a proud member of the History of WWE.com website. The History of WWE.com features thousands of complete cards and detailed results from throughout wrestling history from multiple major promotions. In addition to outstanding columns and reviews, it is now also the official home of the Place to Be podcast and Scott and Justin's pay-per-view reviews. Visit us at thehistoryofwwe.com or on Facebook by searching for the Place to Be podcast or the History of WWE. The Place to Be is now the History of WWE.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, what do you call it, Kramer?
The billiard room.
No.
The name.
The billiard?
Not billiard. What? Not the billiards. It was...
Come on, everybody. What? Come on.
We call it the place to be.
The place to be.
Yes, it's the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can...
Time to play the game!
Well, you always left me satisfied and smiling, so...
That's what she said!
Why do I want this?
Yeah.
Because I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, it is now time for the Place to Be podcast. And now your hosts, Justin Rosero and Scott Criscolo.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to the Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, and tonight we open back up the Vintage Vault to continue our trek through wrestling history, WWE history, 1989. Of course, joining me, as always, is the birthday boy, my PIC, Scott Criscolo. Scott, a very happy birthday to you tonight.
Oh, thank you very much, Mr. Rosero, and a good evening to you on this steamy Wednesday evening. Some shaky weather here in the Northeast. Was actually a, I don't know if you heard this today, there was actually a tornado that ripped through Springfield.
Yes.
And close to your old college town of Worcester.
Yeah,
as
Derek,
well,
so. Derek seemed offended that I didn't check in to see where he was, but I told him, I said, you were signed on and on an instant messenger. I assumed you were okay, that you weren't IMing during the heart of the tornado. So
that's funny.
Fucking clown. So anyway, I hope you had a good birthday. Hopefully the Bruins deliver you a win as a birthday present.
I hope so as well. As of we are talking, we are scoreless in the third period of game one, so I turned it off so we can focus on our business at hand. I'll check back on them later. Again, we'd like to welcome those of you who are new to the Place to Be Nation through the wonderful History of WWE.com website by our very good friend Graham Coffon. And for those that listened to the first podcast we put on the site on Monday and you were thinking, not really that much wrestling talk. Okay, well, guess what? You're going to get more than your fill here.
Yes.
Because today on the Place to Be podcast, we are doing the bread and butter for you new listeners. The thing that made Justin and I famous, if you will. And it wasn't The Undertaker in 2002. He didn't make us famous. Tonight on the Place to Be podcast, the keys, I opened the vault. There was a surprise in there. Derek LaRue put in balloons and, a mannequin with a long gray beard and one of his funny jokes. So.
It's a monumental birthday for you because you're closing in on Methuselah now. He's the oldest, oldest alive, human being alive. So.
Well, he did buy me some gruel today. I was going to say beer, but I don't think beer was invented during the Old Testament. So, anyway, I feel quite blessed. In any event, tonight on the Place to Be podcast, as Mr. Rosero said in the beginning, we are opening up our vintage vault and. Actually, one of Justin's and my favorite shows of the old of the first 8 years of the pay-per-view era, SummerSlam 1989.
A little momentum and much more. Away we go!
And of course, the crackling voice of Tony Schiavone welcomes us to the Meadowlands on this hot, steamy August evening in 1989, and as you'll notice, this is our first pay-per-view, not counting the debacle of WrestleMania 2, where Gorilla and Jesse are not in the booth for the show. We have Tony Schiavone stepping in, and Tony Schiavone, of course, was the famous voice of the NWA for many years, starting in like around 84 through about this time when Jim Ross kind of started to take his steam as the main play-by-play guy in the NWA, Tony jumped ship and caught on with WWF in early 1989. He was around for WrestleMania 5 and was pretty much just doing, you know, some of the syndicated shows and a lot of, like, Coliseum video stuff. But they let him go here with Jesse, give Gorilla the break. And actually, I think they do pretty well together here. I like them in the two pay-per-views that they work together here.
Yeah, these two are funny in two different ways. This pay-per-view is funny because it's almost like a comedic train wreck as the show progresses. The other show they do, which is the 1990 Royal Rumble, they're actually a lot better, straight up good cohesiveness. But this one's funny because they just seem kind of off for some reason. Yes, Tony Schiavone. The first time I ever saw him was Starrcade 84, as Justin mentioned. He actually was at Starrcade 83. He was a locker room interviewer for the first Starrcade, and then after that he did play-by-play. He didn't play-by-play in 84. He was backstage in 84. Starrcade 85 was his first actual play-by-play event. But again, as Justin mentioned, when the NWA bought Bill Watts' Mid-South promotion, bringing in a lot of guys, including Jim Ross. Good old JR was obviously the voice of the UWF and of Mid-South.
Yes.
And he ended up actually taking one of the producer roles that Schiavone thought he was owed. So when his contract was up, he left and probably took more money. He was obviously lower on the announcing totem pole, but he does do the play-by-play here.
Mm-hmm.
So but I'm sure he took more money for this short stretch. He doesn't last very long, maybe a little over a year, and then goes back, But he is in the big seat here with giving Gorilla a summer breather. And, of course, Jesse in one of probably his most memorable pay-per-view evenings.
Yeah, it's definitely up there.
Yeah, as a color commentator. So let us paint the picture for you. The date is August 28th, 1989. It is a Monday night, and the Criscolo household was rocking. The guys were over, the pizza was purchased, and we were ready to rock and roll. My mother hid in her air-conditioned bat cave at the end of the hallway where she didn't come out, and we were having the fan on the floor, so it wasn't totally comfortable, but it was about as comfortable as it's going to be in my house. And we were ready to rock and roll. We were watching and this actually, Justin, and I know you and I are big marks for the countdown shows.
Yes.
That one was actually one of my favorite countdown shows. I always enjoyed the SummerSlam 89 countdown show. Now, did you watch this show live?
No, I didn't. It was late 89 where I first kind of wrestling
right.
seeped into my consciousness.
That's
it wasn't
right.
until early
right.
90 that I was really
that's right.
locked
that's
in.
That's right. I forgot about that. That's right. So you had not seen it yet. So, and I read this was like you with this was like you did this with WrestleMania 6. And I was like it with this show. I rented the show constantly. And I actually had it on tape, too. And then I rented it after the tape got messed up. But so it was on a steamy Monday night. At the Meadowlands Arena, you can call it whatever you want. You can call it the Brendan Byrne Arena, which is what it was at the time. We put Meadowlands Arena on our written review, but it was called the Brendan Byrne Arena as well. It wouldn't be called Continental Airlines Arena for at least another like 3 or 4 years. And then obviously it would become the Izod Center, which is what it is now. East Rutherford, New Jersey, otherwise known as the Swamp in the Garden State. Attendance, an even cool 20,000, so the place was rocking, jammed to the rafters. And the buy rate, 4.8, which... Justin and I talk about the buy rate equation constantly. 4.8, still pretty solid. And the SummerSlams, the first like probably 4 or 5 SummerSlams, really the buy rate was awesome. That was the one good thing about having a big gap between WrestleMania and SummerSlam is the anticipation for this show was usually pretty damn good.
Mm-hmm.
So the buy rate was usually pretty good. Obviously, that would change in 93. But we'll
now, there is a key point to talk about here as well, because it was in 1989 in New Jersey where Vince McMahon... first admitted that wrestling was fixed. It was an entertainment program that was not on the up and up, and I believe that was so he could get clearance into the market
right.
to hold the show here. So this is a pretty important show as far as the history of the business goes, where Vince pretty much went out and officially broke kayfabe.
Yes, he had to.
He would come out, obviously, on a bigger scale in the 90s, but officially he did leak it here.
Yeah, but he had to because otherwise he was going to have to deal with a lot of issues with the New Jersey State Athletic Commission, who was still taking stuff very seriously still. Then there was a lot of tax issues as well. And it's funny because this would be the last show, pay-per-view, in this building for 8 years. And the next time it would be in this building, which would be SummerSlam 97, it would be an even bigger deal. But we'll get to that, obviously, when we get there.
Mm-hmm.
Again, attendance 20,000, 4.8 the buy rate, and your announcers, as Justin mentioned. Tony Schiavone at the play-by-play seat, and of course Jesse the Body Ventura in the color seat. Gorilla was probably at his position at the gate, at the entrance.
I'm sure.
So yeah. Probably giving him a give his voice a breather for one show. Actually, this is the I was gonna say the second straight SummerSlam, but he was out. He unfortunately had to do SummerSlam 88 with
yeah,
the,
this is the first pay-per-view he hasn't announced.
Yeah, at anything. This is actually the first official pay-per-view that Gorilla took off, and he deserved it. He's been on TV constantly. He deserved a breather. Probably was drinking the joy juice down south in Atlantic City for the show. But seriously, he was probably in his Gorilla position.
That's right. It's weird to think. You don't always think of Atlantic City being in New Jersey, so it's kind of funny to think that there are two straight pay-per-views in New Jersey.
Yeah. Well, New Jersey's it's a long state. I've driven down to Wildwood, which is just south of New Jersey. It's pretty much like 10 minutes from the Pennsylvania state line. It's about 20 minutes to Philly. So from East Rutherford to, for those that don't really know that live in other parts of the country, East Rutherford to Atlantic City is not like 10 minutes. It's like 3.5 hours. It's a pretty long drive. Maybe not that long, maybe like 2:45.
Yeah, so I don't think it's 3 hours.
Yeah, it's not that long. No, it's probably 2.5, 2:40. It's still a long drive, though. It's not like from, you know, one town, like, you know, two exits on the highway. It's a pretty long drive. Okay, as usual, we will do... Actually, you know what? We'll switch it up from WrestleMania. Justin will do the odd matches. I will do the even matches. And guess what?
We open with
a tag match. It's like you are booking this awesome tag division.
Yes.
Take it away, sir. And, of course, this opener is unbelievably ridiculous.
Yeah, we've got a lot of things to talk about here. So, yes. You know, there's a lot of shakeup in the tag division over the summer. On July 29th, Saturday Night's Main Event, which was actually taped a week earlier on the 18th, from Worcester, Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
Best 2 out of 3 falls. The Brainbusters challenged Demolition for the tag team titles, and they went ahead and won those belts. So we have new tag team champions, the Brainbusters. Yes. Bobby Heenan, who had been stonewalled of championships for so long, now had the IC and tag titles.
Yes. Obviously, there was chicanery. If I remember correctly, I believe it was Tully was down. Something was going on in the outside. Arn came in with some weapon, knocked, it might have been a chair, I'm not sure, but he knocked Smash out, and then they rolled Tully on top of him and got the pin. I believe that's how the third final pin was. Obviously, there was some type of chicanery.
Right.
But I believe that's how it went. I think Smash got hit with an object by Arn, and Tully was getting the crap kicked out of him, and Arn rolled Tully on top and got the pin. I believe that's how the third fall went.
So in another key... key little storyline plot here, too. This match had already been announced before before the Brainbusters defeated Demolition for the titles. So Bobby decided that he was not going to put the titles on the line. So this is actually a non-title match,
mm-hmm.
which would lead you to think that the Hart Foundation was probably going to win to set up a title feud, but you'd
right.
be incorrect. And another key moment here is Jesse Ventura. Quite prophetic. He says in the beginning or during the match, if the Hart Foundation does not win this match, it could be another year before they see a tag title shot. And he would be pretty accurate because they wouldn't get another major title shot for another year. So,
yep.
The match itself is tremendous, tremendous, tremendous stuff. We both gave it a 4. I could probably even argue higher if you really fought me on it. 16 minutes, nonstop, classic NWA, just meshed with, the hot tag WWF style. Just 4 guys that knew how to work, knew their roles. I don't even know what else to say about it besides it's one of the best pay-per-view openers probably ever, I think, for WWF.
The reason I love this match as well, and as Justin said, we both graded it high, and like you said, I don't think you have to twist our arms to grade it higher. You mentioned meshing with NWA schematics, and this match is perfect for that because there aren't many, and we've talked about it before, about the product of the NWA and the product of the WWF in the late 80s, early 90s. There aren't many tag teams that Vince has. We've been pimping the tag division as great. Work rate wise, a few of the teams were not as suited, or not as good as others. Others were just good at histrionics and theatrics and what have you, like the Powers of Pain, like Demolition, teams like that. But what makes this match even better is because the Hart Foundation, you could probably dump the Hart Foundation down into the Carolinas and they'd fit like a glove.
Yep.
That's just how good they were in the ring. That's how Brett could work anywhere. We're really now seeing what Bret Hart was truly capable of doing in the ring. Mm-hmm. He was really reaching his stride. Anvil's always great. Nothing against the Anvil. People goof on his little beer gut, but whatever. They all had beer guts.
Well, I mean, he played his role well. So, you know, he delivered the power moves and you know, made the hot tag when he needed it and cleared house. And yeah, he was, you know, he was perfect for being Bret's partner.
Exactly. So there's really nothing bad to say about this. One thing I mentioned in my comments, Arn and Tully, obviously as horsemen, moment of silence, are great at controlled mayhem. They know how to amp up the chaos meter of a tag match without making it look disorganized, like looking like no one knows what the hell they're doing. Mm-hmm. Arn and Tully, particularly Arn. Arn knew how to get so frazzled and discombobulated without looking like he was clueless.
Right.
You know, and that's what made him one of my favorite wrestlers of all time, because he just knew how to amp up the energy level of a tag match. And that's what you did here. And you had just four great workers, a great manager, great announcing. Gorilla Jesse, of course, huge Brainbuster fans. And let's be honest. I mean, this is Tony's guys. I mean, Tony, in essence, got to do an NWA match for his first pay-per-view match. So everything just fit in this match. Everything fit.
And
it's
like
not exactly five stars. Maybe a notch below. But you can argue that we put four, but we can argue 4.5.
And I like, too, that the little, as I mentioned with the manager stuff, just those little nuances where, you know, that's an actual thing. You know, this manager had the choice. He decided to protect his titles. Just those little things and why managers, like, helped make the project seem so much more legitimate at the time.
Exactly. And and this is Bobby's time. This is his chance. He was just, you know, all those years, he's been with the company, what, almost 3.5 years now, maybe more, almost 4 years and 4.5 years. And, you know, he was the butt of jokes and he never won anything. This is Bobby's time. He's earned this. Mm-hmm. And he could do whatever he wants. So in the kayfabe world, you want to strangle him because now he's like, ha, I have belts and now I'm not letting you go for them. Ha ha. You know, screw you. And that works great. It's perfect for this role. So this opener is just tremendous because the work rate's good. The pace is good. You got four guys who are essentially wrestling an NWA type style. You have a color commentator who knows work rate. It's one thing about Jesse. You can say what you want, that he's flamboyant, that he's top flight heel, but the guy knows his wrestling.
Yes.
And he knows how to handle these moves. He knows how to call.
And he loved it, too. You know, you can tell when he loves these kind of matches. He loves wrestling. You know, he loves
Exactly. And then, again, you have Tony, who's essentially, you know, he's looks in the ring, and you're like, wow, I feel like I'm doing a WCW pay-per-view, except more expensive and better looking on camera. But it's just an awesome opener. Awesome opener.
And it shows you, too, how far WWF has come in the last year. Because 88 SummerSlam, you know, it was featured a lot of older, washed up guys that were just reaching the end of their rope. And now, right out of the gate here, you have these four young studs going out there and tearing the ring down. So, you know, they really have developed quite the roster over the last year as far as like work rate and ability go.
Exactly. And it just, the crowd loved it. Meadowlands, again, jammed to the rafters, red hot, and just an awesome opener. Arguably one of the three or four greatest openers in pay-per-view history, I think, in any promotion. So this is a match you definitely need to watch. I don't think it's on any DVDs.
No, I don't think so either.
And that's a damn shame.
There's really no reason for it to be either. None of these guys are in the shithouse or, you know, shitter at all, the doghouse at all for Vince.
No.
So it's kind of weird that it's never surfaced at all.
No, I mean, obviously it's not a... I guess there's nothing to connect to it.
It would have been good on the Hart Family DVD.
Yeah, it would have been definitely good on the or the World's Greatest Tag Teams DVD.
Yep.
I like the Hart Family. That's a good choice. I like the Hart Family DVD. So if you can find it on YouTube, watch it. If you're my copy is off. The copy I have of the pay-per-view I got on eBay, and it's just the tape of the – and it's awesome because it's the copy I used to have. It's the tape of the pay-per-view. Mm-hmm. It's not the Coliseum video copy. So but if you find it, watch it. It is truly one of the greatest tag matches we've ever seen, and we wouldn't steer you wrong. I know we always preach, and just to kind of inform our new listeners, we're not those kind of guys who may tell you you're dumb to watch something that sucks or you better watch something that's good or you have no taste. We're not like that. We want you to watch whatever you want, and if you like it and we don't like it, that's fine. It leads to great debate. But this is one of the few times we implore you. You need to watch this match. It is tremendous. We would not steer you wrong. One of the greatest tag matches we've ever seen. And it's unfortunate that it's not on a DVD.
Someday.
So going into that, and this is good because this is my boy's guy. This is the first guy I think that you truly...
He's just a common man.
Yeah!
The son of a son!
This is it. Our second match. This is one of those matches where we're great. We don't really care. This is just thoroughly entertaining, yeah. And it's more dues paying. Obviously, we are talking about the Honky Tonk Man, who at this point is signing every check to every devil that he made a deal with while being Intercontinental Champion, because it's just looking at the lights one show after another. And his opponent, a guy that has not been in a WWE ring for almost 10 years, but this is his pay-per-view debut, and that is, as you heard the music, the Mac and Dream, son of a Plymouth Moth in Texas.
We'll see right here, Scott Criscolo, the Dusty Rhodes, the American Dream, baby, coming into the WWF, taking on the Honky Tonk Man with the slick back hair and his guitar and his Jimmy Hart.
That's right. He has winded down with kings and queens and slept in alleys and downed on pork and beans. Obviously, Dusty Rhodes has been in the NWA for he's been in wrestling for
a long time. 20 years at this point, at least.
Why don't you? I'm going to let you. I know this was I was going to intro this one, but I'm giving you the honor. This is your guy. Give us the history of the Dream. I'm letting you have this one. Take it.
Well,
your
he
guy.
Started Go in ahead. The late 60s, early 70s as a heel, teaming with Dick Murdoch. It was a very, very popular team, very well oiled machine like team.
Texas
eventually,
Outlaws.
Eventually, he split off, turned face, had a run, major star in Florida, obviously. Showed up in the WWF in the late 70s, had a great three-match series with superstar Billy Graham at Madison Square Garden, with each match kind of being more violent than the one before it. Then he went back to the NWA, where he won the World Heavyweight Championship, lost it to Ric Flair, then he went back to Florida, right? Then he came back to the NWA, Jim Crockett again. That's where he'd stay through most of the 80s until he came here. Won the title again at Starrcade 85 from Flair. Lost it back to Flair. And then after that, just kind of, he was booking as well. So he was just kind of floating around booking and had himself in the upper mid card for a while. Finally, his act was kind of wearing thin. And then the final salvo came when he did a nasty, gory blade job on TBS shortly after the promotion. Or it was either during the sale or after TBS. I had already bought it. I forget when exactly it happened, but he was fighting the Road Warriors, and he had them jam one of their spikes in his eye, and his like nasty blood gushing everywhere, and he got fired for that. So, of course, he came coming to Vince. Vince figured he would mock him a little bit, have him wear the polka dots, and kind of be a goofy, common man, and Dusty embraced it, as he always does. And the rest is history. Polka dots, the song, that's it.
And you know what? Vince could have made anything out of Dusty, and he still would have made it gold.
Yeah.
Obviously, he mentioned the Starrcade 85 match. There was actually that, and it's funny you mentioned that match, because that is the birth of the Dusty finish, which is the, good guy won, so you make the crowd happy for now, but we'll spin it later, because we need to have the heel keep it, because it's making better money down the line.
Yep.
And he had it was a DQ screw job the following week. Flair got the belt back, and then Dusty ended up beating him legit at the 86 Great American Bash in the cage. And again, he lost it like 3 weeks later or something.
Yep.
I remember that blade job on TBS. It was pretty nasty. The Road Warriors were heels. They turned heel on Dusty, and it was pretty nasty. So he arrived here, polka dots and all. And it's funny. Before we get into this match, just very quickly, it's funny, though, because the time you and I have known each other, we've talked about all sorts of different things that we first liked when we were fans. He is one of the first guys you actually liked. And it's funny how you knew nothing about this guy's legit, 17-year career before this moment. And all you knew was the polka dot Dusty.
Yeah, pretty much.
And you liked him anyway. And I think that's hilarious.
Well, I was always drawn to the colorful, kind of goofier characters. I just liked the way he talked. I mean, his talking was the big part of his draw. So, I mean, that was there still. Regardless of where he was on the card. And when you're a kid, the main eventers, but everyone else is interchangeable. So, to you, these guys are all bigger than life when you're nine. So, he was, obviously I was drawn to him. I was drawn to guys like Coco. I just like the characters. That's just kind of the way I went. And I was caught on to WCW / NWA fairly quickly. I'd say by like mid-91, I was kind of in on them, knowing what was going on. So I knew when Dusty went back there, and then obviously start to learn more about what he was prior to that. But, he's fun to imitate. He's fun to make fun of. And, he's great at his job. And later on, you know, his WCW stuff as a commentator in the 90s was tremendous stuff as well. So,
right.
But the match here, you know, it's brief, but it's fun. 10 minutes, they brawl around. Dusty gets the win, clean win to kind of, you know, get his run going because he had just debuted shortly before this. Honky gets smashed with the guitar. He actually gives a pretty funny interview in the aisle after Sean Mooney, where he's like acting all like punch drunk from getting hit with the guitar, and he, you know, talks like he's Elvis, and it was actually kind of funny, I thought.
Yeah, I enjoy this match just because I'm enjoying seeing Honky have to sell us, you know, take his soul back to Satan for holding the Intercontinental title hostage, and I, you know, it's funny, I was never. And I've said this in previous podcasts, but just to let our newer listeners know, my WWF fandom is mostly the baby faces. I was a Hogan fan, Warrior, all those guys. But my NWA fandom, I was big time. No one, except maybe my brother, no one was a bigger Four Horsemen fan than I was. So actually, I was not a big Dusty fan early on because I liked seeing him get his ass kicked. So because I was a big Flair, Ole, Arn, and Tully fan. But Dusty was a great character and a fun guy, and I used to like his Southern. He was like the one guy that showed off the Southern style with his skull and his Big Daddy Don Garlitz t-shirts and all, you know, and Harry Gant and all the NASCAR guys and, you know, his jean jackets and, you know, his beer hats for, you know, PBR and just seeing that Southern look. I always got attracted to that. But I liked seeing him here in WWF because he was the kind of guy that could make a great character. And I think this was one of Vince's things where he kind of took his dad's thing because his dad loved Dusty. And obviously never had him win the title because he was a big superstar Billy Graham guy, but they always put on great matches at the Garden. This match is not any of those matches. Again, it's just a goofy throwaway match to make Honky lose and make Dusty look good. So if you're looking for work right here, don't. It's just a fun little 9-minute affair to kind of get Dusty over and, you know, make Honky continue to pay his dues. So, you know, crowd's hot still. It's a good spot in the card for this match.
Yeah.
And it makes the crowds are pretty hot. So good match to watch. Nothing fancy. Is it on Dusty's DVD?
I don't know. I think it is, actually.
Let me I have it right here next in our place to be library or one of our two libraries. Let's take a quick peek and see if it's on the matches. That's the older ones. Let's see. Disc 2. It is. It is on. Yeah, it's on Dusty's The American Dream, okay. Which is actually a good DVD. I definitely recommend it. So it's definitely on that DVD. So good match here. Nothing fancy. You know, Dusty gets the win and moves on to actually he gets into a pretty good feud towards the end of 89, actually.
Yes.
And we'll get more into that at our next show. So why don't you lead us into our next match? Kind of an irony here with these two guys.
Yes. And the next match is Mr. Perfect taking on the Red Rooster. And, of course, the urban legend goes these two were up for each other's gimmicks, and this is how it ended up. Red Rooster's still hanging on. His steam is kind of slowly fading as he slips away from the Bobby Heenan feud, and now he's just kind of become a lower mid-card guy. Mr. Perfect continuing to gain steam. His Perfect record still intact at this point. This match I had high hopes for. I thought these two were really going to, you know, put on a show, but unfortunately, a few minutes in, it looks like Terry Taylor, Red Rooster, blows out his knee. Because he just kind of falls to the floor, and then he comes back in, collapses, and Perfect puts out the Perfect Plex for the win. And they only go about 3 minutes. So, I mean, I was hoping for more. Obviously, there had to be an injury involved, because I don't think they would have this be this quick of a squash. But right. Regardless, good win for Perfect. He stays undefeated and just kind of keeping the express lane moving along here. But so decent stuff for the time we got.
Yeah, it was unfortunate because I think these two probably were scheduled to at least go another probably 3.5-4 minutes and put on a decent match. And it's unfortunate because Terry Taylor is a very talented guy, and all the younger WWF fans of that era, you included, probably didn't know much about Terry Taylor's career before that, but he was actually an exceptional wrestler. We've talked about it before, past podcasts. So the injury kind of kills the flow of the match, but Perfect was the guy here anyway, so it didn't really matter in the whole scope of things. He gets the big win. And moves on. So there's not much more to that one. Our next match,
Before you move on, I believe it was around this point where this infamous moment happened. I got it queued up here for us to enjoy.
Okay.
Overland with Ravishing Rick Rude and Bobby the Brain Heenan. Gentlemen, as you know, the Ultimate Warrior. Nice. Fuck it.
Of course, Mean Gene dropping the F-bomb on live pay-per-view when the SummerSlam sign falls behind him. It's either after the Perfect match or after the next match. I can't. It's in here somewhere.
Yeah, just their background to the younger fans. Obviously, in between matches, Mean Gene would do his awesome stand-up interviews you know, at the in the interview area, which is usually just a plain colored screen or, you know, background with the logo usually taped on or Velcroed on. Well, right after this match, for those that may not be able to hear it too clearly, Mean Gene was about to interview the Intercontinental Champion, Ravishing Rick Rude, and Bobby the Brain Heenan. He gets about four words into his question, and the SummerSlam logo falls off the wall. And I think Mean Gene must have thought that the tape stopped, so he turned around and he said, fuck it. And then they went back to, and I'm sure Tony's like, Gorilla might have probably said something witty, or him and Jesse. There's where the chemistry problem was, but that's all right. You can't really.
No, what are you going to do? Yeah,
that. I mean, yeah, you can't really expect that. But it is pretty funny. It's one of the more infamous moments. So I'm sure the guy, the editing guy, well, it was live. You really couldn't do anything about it. I mean, no, you got to kind of, Mean Gene probably got a slap on the wrist for not, you know, he'd have a funnier moment. Just as funny an on-screen moment, not as vulgar, but when we get to the 1992 Royal Rumble, he has just as funny a live interview moment. We'll get to that when we get there. But yeah, it was right around here, or it was after the next match that Mean Gene had his infamous moment. So, our next match, again, one of the more entertaining and fun matches of this show, and probably a match that I would have put later on. We'll get more into the match layout when we get towards the end. I probably would have put this match further on down the card, but this is an exceptional six-man tag match. It is the Fabulous Rougeau brothers and newly, freshly turned heel Ricky Martel. So you have a six-man French-Canadian tag team here, right up Mr. Azzaro's alley.
Oh, yeah.
And his opponents, Tito Santana, of course, freshly left to get his ass beaten by the Brainbusters at WrestleMania. And the Rockers, Shawn Michaels and Marty Jannetty. So clearly we're dealing with six exceptional in-ring talents in one ring. And Martel is being managed by Slick, probably because they just wanted to have a heel manager with him. He's still just Rick Martel. He has not morphed into his next character, which we'll get into more at Survivor Series. But he does have a heel manager here. The Rougeaus, or is Jimmy still with the Rougeaus right here? Is Jimmy and Slick at ringside?
Yeah, Jimmy was with the Rougeaus until they left.
That's what I thought. So you have two heel managers. You have Jimmy Hart managing the Rougeaus, and of course Slick is managing Ricky Martel. And obviously the Rockers and Tito. 15 minutes, and it's tremendous. Once again, another match of six great athletes. Gave them a lot of nice juicy time. I have a feeling they gave this match more minutes to cover the minutes lost in the perfect Rooster match.
Definitely possible.
Although they could have just given him 15 because they knew the six of them could handle it. It's just an awesome match. Once again, I highly recommend finding it. I definitely know this is not a DVD anywhere. You might have to find this on YouTube or Daily Motion. But you're dealing with six guys who were just so crisp in the ring, and Martel was just such a snotty prick. It's just great. Three evil French Canadians, again, right up my partner's alley.
Yeah, definitely a forgotten gem.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, back and forth action, six great athletes. You have three of the greatest babyface in peril guys of the 80s, Marty, Sean, and Tito, who made a living out of getting the shit kicked out of them from one show to another and then getting the hot tag. And it's just a great match. Again, I would have put it later on in the card. We'll explain more about that as we move along. But I personally love this match, and I know you do as well.
Yeah. I mean, it was just, you know, great stuff. And the Strike Force feud, you know, they continue to kind of war, and they would go right until they'd have a big match on Saturday's Main Event. But this feud goes on for the next, like, 2 years. But, yeah, I mean, this is just really six guys just working their asses off going out there to carry the mid-card. And this is another great reason why, you know, shows you how far the promotion has come in this year once again, that these six guys can go out there and just tear the ring up, give 15 minutes and just really put on a clinic of a match. And, you know, the French-Canadian team gets the win, obviously because Martel was pretty much the main guy, you know, looking to get the push at this point. So, yeah, great match, and that leads us into another great match. And, of course, that's a rematch from WrestleMania, where we have the Ultimate Warrior trying to get back his Intercontinental title from Ravishing Rick Rude. Feud continued over the summer after Rude had won the title. They kind of started sniping each other week to week. On July 24th, Rude was ready to give the Rude Awakening kiss to a lady from the audience, as he most often did. As Rude's eyes were closed, about to get a kiss, Warrior came in the ring. The woman stepped aside, and he started pounding the shit out of Rude. Rude would get revenge a couple weeks later after Warrior defeated Haku. And then the Saturday prior to this show, Andre the Giant would come out and help Rude and choke out the Warrior. and that would kind of jumpstart the Warrior-Andre feud that would carry the promotion through the fall. So, interesting build-up here, and of course, they would deliver. Now, the WrestleMania match was very good. This match is excellent. The commentary is great, which we'll get to in a moment, but let's talk about the match first. These two just really went all out, beating the crap out of each other. A lot of stiff action. These two had great chemistry. Another match, just over 15 minutes. Where they really, really just took it to each other. I mean, they'd go to the floor, they'd brawl, they'd come back in. Rude was just exasperated. You know, Warrior just kept kicking out. Bobby was exasperated. Just great, great character work, great in-ring work here, too. Another tremendous match on this card.
This is clearly, and I didn't put it at 5 stars because it's not exactly a perfect match. It's hard to put this match with the Warrior Savage or the Steamboat Savages of the Pantheon, but this is I don't think there's any question, and you mentioned it, you actually worded it very well in your comments on the review. This is the match that defines this pay-per-view, and it's the match that really is spoken of very highly, and it for a match that a lot of people didn't expect. And again, we say this a lot, and it's funny how we, you know, there was a DVD made on him, and everybody make fun of him, and he's out of his gourd, and he's crazy, and he's a lunatic. But let's just lay it out on the table here, and we'll be doing it again over the next couple of years. When this guy had a match on a big stage, he rarely ever blew it.
Right.
And the Ultimate Warrior deserves a lot of credit for that. Sure, he's nuts. No, he's not. You know, he doesn't have Ric Flair, work rate, or Bret Hart, or Shawn, or anybody like that.
He knew how to tell a story, and his selling and character work was very good. You know, he wasn't someone, and I know you're a huge Road Warriors fan, but to me, the difference with the Ultimate Warrior is he wasn't afraid to sell and make guys look good at his expense.
Right.
You know, he would look strong in the end and very rarely lost, but during the match, he wasn't no-selling. He wasn't, you know, kicking out of guys' finishers easily. You know, he really would help other guys look well during the matches, too.
Exactly. I don't disagree with you on that. He didn't have a problem making a mistake. And it happens in this match because the first, 5 minutes of this match, Warrior is just beating the snot out of Rude. And then he tries to go to the top rope, which is not one of his, you know, his
strengths.
Best strengths. And Rude made him pay. So he had no problem making a mistake and letting it continue to read the psychology of the match. So I do agree with you. Sometimes the Road Warriors no selling could get a little tedious depending on the match. This is a case where it's good that a big, crazy, but really, you know, ripped guy made a mistake. And it helped tell the psychology of the match.
Mm-hmm.
And Rude did a great job selling. The build of this feud was great. You documented some of the high points. Essentially, Rude took the belt, dangled it in front of Warrior like a carrot, and made him chase it, which is a mark of a great feud. That's a basis. I have a title. You want it. Come and get it. No problem with that. Best way. That's the best basis of any kind of feud.
And
they took something simple. And you took two great characters to just make it better.
And as we also mentioned, the commentary here was tremendous, and we pulled up a little snippet for you of our favorite part of the commentary.
Yes.
that is what like two of the greatest moments of Jesse Ventura commentary of all time. I've always loved that whole stretch right there. Where the hell's the referee? You could shoot someone outside the ring. I've never liked this guy. And you know, you're even dumber than Monsoon.
Yeah, it's pure gold. And you could tell that. And we all saw at WrestleMania 5 that Hulk Hogan is not one of Jesse's favorite guys. But I think there's a guy that maybe Jesse hates just as much, and that's the Ultimate Warrior. When he said, I don't like him, he was not lying.
Right, because and as we'll see at WrestleMania 6 when they fight, you know, he sides with Hogan. So
yes. And then we have another, of course, you're talking about two of the greatest Jesse moments of all time. That show, of course, has another one as well. But yes, we're going to save that one because that one's just as delicious. But, yeah, the commentary is just top-notch. I felt bad for Tony. I think he was probably like, Bob Caudle doesn't treat me like this. So, but, you know, it's just amazing. And then the kicker, in the end, Warriors about, or Rude hits him with a pile driver. There was a great, and I almost, it was one of the few times I got sucked into it. Because after a while, when you become a wrestling fan, you start to see things in matches you know are about to happen. And that's the first time that I actually got caught off guard. After the ref bump, Warrior's about to pin Rude, and they're right next to the ropes. And and Earl does the slow, or if it's Dave, I don't remember which one, who was still, it must have been Earl at this point. Slow one, and then the two, and then just as he's about to hit the three, Rude's foot's on the rope. And that's the first time in my life as a wrestling fan that I ever got caught. Oh, man, he's next to the ropes. I didn't realize it. Now, of course, anytime you see a pin near the ropes, usually in a title match, you know almost for a fact that somebody's going to touch the ropes. So that was great. But that last, like, 5 minutes is just unbelievable television. And then, of course, the kicker, and we'll I'll let you set it up at the end, with the kicker to set the match off. The moment that set the match to its conclusion.
Yes, of course. The Hot Rod, who had been pretty much just putting around doing some pits, and he was on primetime, I think, throughout the summer as well. Mm-hmm. Kind of being like third host with Gorilla. And Bobby, he comes out, stands at ringside, pulls his kilt up, moons Rude, who freaks out. Warrior back suplexes him off the rope and then hits him with the splash. And this would, as we mentioned, Warrior and Andre would kind of kick off from here. And now Rude and Piper would start a pretty hot feud throughout the fall. As Piper kind of started to get back in the swing of things wrestling-wise now after being off for a couple of years. So a really fun ending. The crowd was red hot. Rude had a good run. Warrior gets his title back. And there's not much more you can say besides this match is just tremendous. And this wraps up a first half of SummerSlam that really ranks up with any card throughout pay-per-view history, I think.
Yeah, it's a great mid-show main event. You know, tremendous ending, hot ending. Crowd really gets into it. And it's a great way to cap off the first half of the show. And it's one of my favorites of all time. This match is definitely on a DVD. It's probably on Warriors. You have Warriors, right? I don't have Warriors.
I don't know if it's on. It might be. I feel like it's been on somewhere.
I have in my hand the History of the Intercontinental Championship DVD. I guarantee you it's on this one. Let's see.
I'm not sure. Five maybe.
Let's see. Nope. It's on the History of the Intercontinental.
Okay,
the nice one, not the old one. It's on the nice one, the one that came out with the that looks like the two other belts, the blue copy.
So I'm curious if it has Jesse on it, because I know a lot of those usually don't.
You know what? I would think they did, because if it's Gorilla, if it's Tony alone, then it really sounds dumb.
But they have Tony alone on the SummerSlam 89 for Dusty's DVD. Dusty Honky's on there.
Oh, that's right.
And that's
yeah,
just Tony. I think the IC and the world title sets had Jesse, though, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is, too. But it's on disc one, so definitely. I like that set anyway, so I would definitely buy it. But, yeah, it's on that. So that match is definitely on a DVD, so definitely DVD quality. Then we go to the intermission, because back in those days there was a five-minute intermission. And that's usually when all of us took pisses or dumps. I had one friend who smoked, so we went out and had a smoke, you know, everybody kind of chilled out, relaxed. It was such a hot. And, I mean, you really needed the intermission, because, I mean, those first five matches were just so high energy. You were really, you're like, oof, wow. And particularly the end of that match, you're like off the wall. My friend Tom at the time, big Warrior mark. He loved Warrior, so he was bouncing off the walls. He could have gone home and not cared about the rest of the show, but obviously he didn't. But, I mean, those first five matches are incredible, and the place is just hopping. And they had a five-minute intermission. And this is where the show kind of – this is where the issues come in. This is where match placement was probably the only low point of this show.
And the show doesn't nosedive by any means. And the crowd remains hot. And the matches have good angles and good work. It's just they kind of put all the heavy, fast-paced NWA-style work rate matches in the first half. And then here it's kind of the old-school WWF matches that still have good heat to them. Good character work and a hot crowd, But it's just, it just makes the card feel a little unbalanced.
Exactly. Our next match, the first match after the intermission, is another six-man tag, which is clearly way different. It's yes. a complete 180 than the six-man
it's
tag.
It's the Haas, really... favorite's wet dream right here.
Yeah, exactly. This is for guys like you and I who love just big wrestling, of course. Big friggin' dudes hitting each other. You have Demolition, the former, and we haven't had to say that yet, former World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Champions, Demolition, take and their partner, Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
I got my 2x4.
Even on my birthday, really. You couldn't even play his theme.
He came to say happy birthday to you, tough guy.
Oh, my God. Simon Cowell's going to want royalties for the amount of times you play that cut.
Let's get more airtime now than it ever did. I'll say that much.
True. Taking on Mr. Rosero's favorite heel six-man tag team of all time.
Yes.
The Twin Towers and Andre the Giant. You're talking beef.
Yeah.
What was
that a great team.
What was the exact number? It was like 1,158 pounds.
Yeah,
some like ludicrous
ridiculous.
Number.
What a great team, though. That's a true heel Haas badass team right there.
Yes. And actually, Duggan is officially the king right now. He is King Duggan.
Yes.
He defeated Haku at a house show in May in Davenport, Iowa, to become the next king. So there have officially now been three kings, Harley Race, then Haku, and now Hacksaw Jim Duggan, which is pretty much the closest to a title he'd ever get.
And a cool touch as well. He had his face painted like Demolition, but it was in the American flag. I thought that was pretty cool looking.
Yes. I think Jesse says he's defaming the American flag, and yes. I probably agreed with him. God, it's hard to explain. I'm telling you, he's going to call you before his X Factor show and he's going to ask for some checks from you or from us. I don't know. I'll have to ask Graham to see what's in his kitty.
I don't think he needs any of our money.
No, probably not. Just kidding anyway. But it's really hard because for Justin and I, this is a very entertaining match. We didn't grade it very high because really from brass tacks, it's really not that great. But, I mean, we're marks for it because we just love watching six big honking dudes beat the hell out of each other. But clearly, from a work rate point of view, this match just puts the brakes on the pace of this show.
Right.
And it's not these guys' fault. They're six big, fat dudes.
No, they went out there and did what – I mean, they went and did what they were supposed to do. And, you know, the crowd is into it because Duggan was always over and Demolition is always over. So
right.
The crowd is fine. And actually, the highlight of the match to me – kind of comes out of nowhere when Smash comes in and body slams Boss Man and Akeem back to back. I thought that was a really cool spot.
Yes, yeah. I mean, I think it's just great to see guys just show off just major power and just pull off big moves like that. And you think, oh, you slam the guys. Let me tell you something. To slam two guys easily, well, at the time, Boss Man was probably about 380.
Yeah, he was pretty heavy.
And clearly, Akeem was like in the 420s, 430s. I mean, he was pretty friggin' big. Yeah, he didn't slam him, did he? No, I didn't think so. He would have hit him with his 2x4, which he probably did at some point in this match. No one
That's how they won. He hit Akeem.
Yeah, there you go. Yes. And I'm sure, just like Gorilla, Shivani's loving it. Yay! Come on, even you had to be pissed off that your guys got screwed. Come on.
I was very upset, especially that Akeem had to eat the pin of all guys.
See? Good. Glad somebody else was pulling. I can't wait till King of the Ring 93. Anyway, you know what? Again, and Justin can back me up on this. For guys that just love watching big friggin' power matches, this is very entertaining. The only issue here is that the first five matches of this show had such high energy and was such pacing, and the matches were just so fast, and the energy level was high, and this match just kind of grinds it to a halt. It was better to put this match earlier and kind of bob and weave the pace than just hit the brakes and just have six really slow guys just kind of lumber around and kill the pace of the show. This match would have been better off earlier on. I would have probably flip-flopped. Easily here, I would have flip-flopped the two six-man tags.
Yes.
I would have no problem putting this one where the other one was. And if that match opened the second half of the show, you had the exact same issue.
Well, I wouldn't even done it there, though, because
really?
You're coming off a hot match. So I would have had our next match there and then the six-man.
Okay.
Because... you know, coming off Warrior Rude, I don't think you want another fast-paced hot match.
Yeah, that's true. I agree. But definitely,
the next match is like 3 minutes, so that would have been a good little buffer.
Yeah, and the next match is more suited for the pre and post than really the match itself.
Yeah.
So there you go. The good guys win. Duggan cheats like he always does. And, you know, yippee-ki-yay. The Twin Towers get screwed. Justin's favorite guy, Akeem, loses to a 2x4 hit. See? See? Somebody else is upset now, not just me. Why don't you play the cut again while Akeem's looking at the lights?
No.
I didn't think so.
I will not desecrate the memory of Akeem with that.
Good. Why don't you introduce our next match? Because really, it's the bread of the sandwich at the beginning and end, and the meat in the middle. That's for sure.
Yes. Okay. Our next match is Greg Valentine taking on Hercules. Both guys kind of aimlessly going around, meandering in the mid card. But Valentine actually had a little bit of a feud going. Him and Ronnie Garvin, rugged Ronnie Garvin, of course, started their feud on April 22nd, Superstars. Garvin won a match, defeated Valentine. An angry Valentine challenged him on the spot to a career versus career match. Ronnie accepted. They fought the next week, and Valentine won, forcing Garvin to retire out of nowhere on Superstars. He still wrestled some house show matches, but on camera, he was officially retired. So Garvin still needed to be employed, obviously, so he began refereeing matches. One of those matches in June was Demolition against Valentine and Honky Tonk Man. Garvin came into the match late and called for a DQ after the original ref got bumped. After altercations with other various heels as ref, most notably Dino Bravo, President Jack Tunney suspended Garvin as a referee on the August 5th Superstars. Garvin was officially reinstated as wrestler on August 27th. So here, Garvin also plays a role. With this gem, he decides to be the ring announcer for this match, and the following hilarity ensued.
Following contest scheduled for one fall.
He does a good job.
He's reading two cards.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that.
Coming down the aisle, weighing 275 pounds.
The fans to their feet.
The mighty Hercules.
As rugged Ronnie Garvin makes the announcement, the mighty Hercules making his way to the ring. And I tell you what, Jeff, personally, I can't wait to hear this introduction.
It ought to be interesting.
His so-called opponent.
So-called opponent.
Ring,
well, that's
by
opinion.
A little pipsqueak. Poor excuse of a manager. A big mouth of the South.
Big mouth
Jimmy
of the South.
Hart. Here is a man who says he's from Seattle, Washington. He claims he weighs 249 pounds.
Yes, idiot.
To me, he looks like he's overweight by 30 pounds.
How dare him do that as an announcer?
This individual who can't take for himself. And when he goes to his wimpy manager for advice, little Jimmy can't give him any. He is the only wrestler I've ever seen with two left feet.
Well, he's talking
a lot. Where's the robe with cheap rhinestone?
Oh, boy, he's really...
Can't tell if he's coming or going.
Listen to this.
Made the biggest mistake of his life when he asked for me to be reinstated. Greg the Hammer Valentine.
Now, I like the spirit of this. I like the idea of it. I always into the little guest ring announcer where they rag on the guys.
Mm.
Garvin was a fucking train wreck.
he sounded like he was having a stroke.
Yeah.
And it was so awful. And that's an insult. That's just not good. It was abysmal. And
he stumbled all over himself. The insults were lame. But I mean, his gusto was good. You know.
Yeah, no, he was very energetic, but I don't know who wrote that, but boy, they need to get fired. That sucked in the creativity department. And again, for a guy who always says he's from, what, Michigan, like no one knows he's French-Canadian. I just never understood that. But anyway, that's the open, and then the match is not much. Valentine wins, and then they try and – and then Valentine wins with a roll-up. And then Garvin says, in my opinion, the winner's Hercules. It's just, the whole thing is just such a...
Yeah, he just announces Hercules is the winner. So it's kind of fucked up anyway.
It's just such a mess. This feud is actually not that bad. And I don't say that. And I'm not as a lot of the fans that know us that are not new to the place to be. I am not the biggest Ronnie Garvin fan. But this actually isn't a bad feud. And it gets better from here, thank God. You really can't go much lower than this. So... from an entertainment perspective, these 5 or 6 minutes of camera work is pretty hilarious. The match itself is crap, but the camera work and the ridiculously slurring ring announcing is, I think Andre could have done a better job. I think we could have understood him better than we did Ronnie Garvin, but it's all part of the game and the act. So overall, it's really not much from a wrestling perspective, but the comedy part of it is pretty funny. It's not too bad. That's not on any DVDs. Trust me. Our next match is actually a pay-per-view debut of a true legend of the business. Yes. Now, it's funny that we forget that this is actually his pay-per-view debut. It is the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase. Not him. Not his pay-per-view debut. Taking on one of the legends of the business. Brudder. Superfly, Jimmy Snuka, who makes his pay-per-view. Of course, he came out of WrestleMania 5 before the Dino Bravo, Don Morocco match. Or, no, not Dino Bravo, Don Morocco. Dino Bravo and...
Garvin,
Ronnie Garvin match. Don't know why. Just did. We have a couple of backstories. I will do... I'll do Snuka's background, and then Justin will give you kind of the history of what DiBiase had been up to this point.
Sure.
Because stuff came up after WrestleMania. But let me give you the background, because this is the first guy. This guy was truly my first favorite wrestler. Superfly was born in the Fiji Islands. That is true. Even though his real name is James Rear, he is from the Fiji Islands. Moved up the wrestling ranks. He wrestled for Don Owen up in the Oregon area, Pacific Northwest. I think he wrestled in the San Francisco for Roy Shire. Wrestled in the up in Washington State. I believe he was with Stu Hart in Calgary in the Stampede Wrestling. That Pacific Northwest area he wrestled. He actually went into the Mid-Atlantic region, signed by the Crockett's. He actually beat Ric Flair in a U.S. heavyweight title match in 1979. So he actually had the NWA U.S. heavyweight title for a while. He and Ray Stevens were the NWA tag champs. They were both heels, actually. He arrived in the WWF in 1981. He was a heel managed by Captain Lou. He had a beard, and he was kind of evil crazy. He would have a memorable memorable world title match in a cage with Bob Backlund in, I think, June of 81. He actually would try to splash, because obviously his finisher was the splash off the top rope. Mm-hmm. He would try to splash Backlund off the top of the cage, missed. And actually, that's what happened. That's the finisher. He knocked himself out. Backlund crawled out the door and retained his World Wrestling Federation championship.
Yep.
In the end, he would end up getting attacked by Captain Lou, because it turned out what happened was, it was actually a very intricate feud. What happened was Jimmy Snuka was on with Buddy Rogers, who had a talk show, kind of a Piper's Pit-esque talk show. Mm-hmm. And it turned out that Captain Lou was ripping Snuka off with his pay, with his paychecks. He was taking more than he was supposed to. So in the end, Snuka and Don Morocco and somebody else actually beat the hell out of Snuka, bloodied him up, and Snuka turned babyface. He would end up feuding with the then Intercontinental Champion Don Morocco, the Magnificent Morocco. Actually, there's a great moment on one of those early championship wrestling TV tapings where Snuka actually planches through the ring and attacks Morocco in like this, in the area where the chairs are, rips his suit off, and just goes bonkers. The place is going absolutely crazy. About 6 months after that, in June of 83, this Italian kid from West Haven, Connecticut, put on wrestling for the first time. And the first thing that this guy ever watched was a promo by the Intercontinental Champion, Magnificent Morocco. And that was in June of 83. And 4 months later, on October 17th, 1983, inside of a steel cage at Madison Square Garden, Jimmy Snuka took on the Magnificent Morocco for the Intercontinental title. And obviously, everyone knows this match, because this was the match that made a lot of people fans, mm-hmm. yours truly included. I saw that match, and I was hooked. And it's now been, it'll be 30 years in a couple of years. So 28 years later, I'm here doing Place to Be podcasts and doing pay-per-view reviews.
Half your life.
Half my life. Wow, that makes me a lot younger than I thought you thought I was. There was the moment that everyone remembers. Jimmy Snuka, he had already lost a match. He lost cheap. He headbutted Morocco. Morocco fell through the door. I don't think Vince Sr. trusted Snuka to be a champion. I thought he was a little crazy. Headbutted him through the door. and Morocco held it, retained the title cheaply. But Snuka threw him back in the ring, got to the top rope, stood there, did the I love you on the top of the cage. A historic and an event-changing, historically changing moment. And he splashed Morocco from the top of the cage. And in the crowd that night, and here are the names off the top of my head. Mick Foley, his infamous hitchhiking from eastern Pennsylvania to Madison Square Garden. Bubba Ray Dudley, Tommy Dreamer, and Matt Stryker. I'm pretty sure those four were at that show.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, those four at least I know off the top of my head. There may be a few others, but I know for a fact Mick Foley, Bubba Ray Dudley, Tommy Dreamer, and Matt Stryker were all at Madison Square Garden that night. And it's a moment never to be forgotten. He, of course, would be the corner man for Hulk Hogan and Mr. T at WrestleMania 1. He would then leave, go to the AWA for a couple of years, then kind of bounce around the indies for a bit. And then his off-screen demeanor was not the best. He was convicted or accused of killing his girlfriend in the Fiji Islands, and I believe he got probation. So I think what's funny is...
I don't think it was in the Fiji Islands. I think it was in the U.S. because the rumor goes that Vince showed up. You know, Snuka played dumb, like he couldn't speak English, and actually Vince covered for him and somehow got him off. So I don't know what the deal is. And the sad thing is, Snuka was so over. If you watch some of that stuff from 83, 84, the Piper and the Morocco feuds, I mean, he could have been probably in Hogan's position if he was able to... You know, if he didn't have the cloudy past and maybe a little bit more of a clear promo guy. I mean, his promos were good for what they were, but...
Right. And you actually just reminded me of another great moment, and I totally slipped my mind at the time, and that's, of course, when Piper smacked him in the face with the coconut on Piper's pit. Another...
And that feud is epic. There's actually... I think it's on that old Roddy Piper Coliseum tape. They pretty much have, like, three or four matches from that feud, and those fucking crowds are insane. And the Tonga Kid was in the mix as well. And Cowboy Bob Orton, and just the heat on that feud was just nuts. It's often forgotten. I mean, the coconut thing's not forgotten, but the feud itself, because it was pre-pay-per-view, but it was post, you know, Hogan expansion, it's kind of in that lost 1984 stretch, but that feud was just tremendous.
Yes. I'm trying to see if there's a... you know what? It's not on... I see. I thought it was on this disc, but it's not. I was looking for... Maybe it's on the 80s DVD. I was looking for the match between, because there is a match between him and the Tonga Kid, between Piper and Tonga Kid, who was kind of Piper, was kind of Snuka's like protege. I thought it was on the Piper DVD. Maybe it's on the 80s DVD.
No, it's on the old Piper tape. Maybe that's what you're thinking of, because we have on our 24/7.
Yeah, no, I know we do, but I know it's on one of these DVDs. Let me check real quick. I opened up the 80s one. Let me see. Pretty sure it's on one of these. It's not on Piper's DVD. Let me check real quick. Disc 2. It's not on that one. Is it on disc 1? No. Is it on disc 3? No, it's not. Okay. No, you might be right. Snuka Backlund, the cage match I was just telling you about, is on the 80s DVD, as is Piper and Hogan from the War to Settle the Score. Okay. My bad. I thought I could have sworn one of the DVDs has Piper against the Tonga Kid.
No, I think it's just on that tape.
Okay. Yeah. No, the Piper Coliseum tape is awesome.
Yeah.
So after that, Snuka goes to AWA, bounces around, feuds with Colonel DeBeers. They have some bloody matches. Vern kind of let it all hang out. There were a few times where Vern actually understood the theatric part of wrestling and let them go. And then he came back in 89. So Jimmy Snuka, again, a legend. He will be a future WWE Hall of Famer and my first favorite wrestler of all time. So there's the story of the Superfly. Now, on to DiBiase. Who we kind of floating around after WrestleMania, but he does kind of focus on one guy. Why don't you let us clue us in on what happened with the Million Dollar Man during that stretch?
Right. Obviously, coming out of Mania, it seemed like they were setting him up for a feud with Jake Roberts. DiBiase got involved in Jake's match with Andre, stole Damian. You know, they kind of teased that they'd be feuding on May 6th. Superstars Jake defeated Virgil in just over a minute in a match. After the match, Jake pulled out a wad of cash from Virgil's tights and passed it out to the crowd. DiBiase was pissed off, came out, jumped Jake from behind, and put him in the Million Dollar Dream. Seemed like just a harmless, you know, incident that was starting off the feud. It actually ended up being a major plot point. On 5/8, after a house show match, and obviously that match was taped in early April, it aired May 6th. On May 8th, after a house show match in Orlando, Florida, Jake was arrested on assault charges, stemming from an incident with a fan back in December. So on June 24th, DiBiase went on the Brother Love Show and announced that he put Jake in the hospital with the Million Dollar Dream back on May 6th, saying that Jake needed to have discs removed from his neck from the maneuver. On July 16th, DiBiase showed off a special golden neck brace he crafted as a present for Jake. Jake was out of action while he was handling the legal matters and would return on September 24th. So we'll go ahead and get into that when we get to our next show. So, but right. those two were that feud was brewing, but Jake at this point was still on the shelf. So, but this is just a match to give DiBiase some face time and have him stay strong. And Stuka was a good guy for that because now you know Stuka's back, but his role from here on out is complete jobber to the stars.
Yeah, he's essentially enhancement talent here. He's you know he needs a paycheck. Vince is going to pay him. He's loyal. Another guy that his dad was good to. So he's just here to kind of put guys over and make some money. So and that's fine. It's at this stage of his career. And Snuka was still in great shape. I'm sure he was roiding out like crazy.
Yeah, ridiculous.
But he was still in good shape. Yeah, I mean, this is pretty much just to give DiBiase a paycheck. As obviously because of the back of what happened, Jake is not at this show. Very rare for Jake to not be at a big time pay per view in this 4 or 5 year stretch.
Mm-hmm.
But he was hurt, so. The match as a whole is nothing fancy. Some cheap punches and a lot of posturing and kind of it's kind of a Memphis-y kind of match. A lot of posturing and stalling and nothing really great.
Snuka gets his heat back at the end, hits a splash on Virgil. So
yeah, so nothing fancy. Just a good just a good little match to kill time. Kind of spell the crowd because our main event is next. And so nothing fancy here. You know, DiBiase gets the win, but Snuka gets his heat at the end. So. That's pretty
and that brings us to our main event, much anticipated match. Once again, for the second straight year, it's a tag team match. But this time, the Mega Powers are on separate sides. As Hulk Hogan teams up with his new buddy, Brutus Beefcake, over the summer, they kind of started to expand on that relationship between those two guys. Obviously, real-life close friends.
Yes.
So Beefcake kind of steps into Savage's old spot. And Savage, on the other hand, still kind of fuming over losing the title at WrestleMania, mm-hmm. Went through some changes following that show. He picked up a new manager, Sensational Sherry, who's kind of now, with the women's division being buried, she becomes a valet instead of an actual wrestler. So she becomes basically Sensational Sherry, and of course, as a joke, she'd be called Scary Sherry as well. And also, Savage started to act a little more delusional during the summer. They started buying into like this whole magic cauldron stuff with him and Sherry, and he just he really went off the deep end. And I was kind of sad to see his character delve this far down. Where, and we'll get into this after we talk about this match, what we think should have happened on the show. But also during that summer, No Holds Barred, the movie was released. That's Hulk Hogan's first feature film.
Mm-hmm.
In that film, he feuded with a man named Zeus. Of course, Zeus was portrayed by Tom Tiny Lister, an actor. Vince decided to take that big screen confrontation to wrestling ring. So he brought Zeus in, figuring he would be able to maybe draw some money and hook people into seeing the movie by having that feud. So on the 422 Superstars, Brutus Beefcake was on the Brother Love Show. He was interrupted by Savage and Sherry, who Savage had named his new manager on Superstars the week before. Brutus kept calling her Scary Sherry, as I mentioned, and that caused Savage to attack him, and they would actually cut Beefcake's trademark mullet. So throughout the summer, Beefcake had short hair. The involvement of Zeus started on May 27th, Saturday Night's Main Event in Des Moines, Iowa. Now, a very famous moment here. Hogan was set to fight Big Boss Man in a steel cage. As Hogan was coming down to the ring, Zeus stood blocking the entrance, standing on the steps, kind of a famous image. Hogan tried to move him, but Zeus hit him with those couple of chops to the trapezius and took him out to beat him down. And then the Boss Man Hogan cage match would resume, and that was a tremendous, tremendous match as well. Those two guys worked very well together.
Yes.
On July 8th, Savage and Zeus laid down the challenge to Beefcake and Hogan for SummerSlam. And July 18th, Saturday Night's Main Event, Savage faced Beefcake in a singles match. As Beefcake had a sleeper on Macho Man, Zeus came in, started beating him up. Hogan came in, couldn't do anything, though. Zeus beat him down after getting hit with a chair. He turned around and smiled at him and then just snapped his neck, I think, with a little vice thing and hit the chop. So some pretty good heat, pretty good build for this match, you know, regardless of what you think of Zeus and his position. You know, still pretty well built, I thought, especially for not having a title on the line. So, also one thing I wanted to do now with the passing, obviously, of Macho Man, I thought maybe we'd try and find a promo relating to the match of our shows where he's on. So, I fired one up here for our enjoyment.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable, boy. I see the same things that Sensational Sherry sees, only I see him a little smaller, yeah. Like an itsy bitsy pieces, if you know what I mean. I see the weak link, Brutus the Barber Beefcake. Ooh, yeah, in the bottom of the Cauldron of Madness, yeah. And I also see Hulk Hogan, yeah, on the bottom of the Cauldron of the Madness, and it's because of the human wrecking machine, impervious to pain. And I told you, Hulk Hogan, that this was the end of the road, and I am looking at the end of the road, and also I see Sensational Sherry, you with Miss Elizabeth. Yeah, the possibility is unbelievable.
Thank you very much.
And of course, Elizabeth, as mentioned there, would be in Hogan and Beefcake's corner. And Hogan actually had a pretty memorable promo of the show as well, where he does the whole thing about carrying Liz on the motorcycle and her headlights shining brightly or something like that.
That's right, yeah.
I was trying to find the Zeus one. I couldn't find it where he calls Brutus Beefcake Barber.
Beefcake Barber, yeah.
Beefcake Barber.
With his eye pointing in the wrong direction. Yeah, very funny. And what's funny is, I'm not going to look it up, but I'm pretty sure that Hogan Boss Man cage match is on the Saturday Night's Main Event DVD. I'm pretty sure. I'm almost positive it is. And the match is tremendous. But I actually like the visual. It's a low camera, and it's over Hogan's shoulder, and you see Zeus, and he says, "Move me!"
Yes.
And it's just a great visual. And Jesse's just, like, stroking it, Tim. I mean, every time, the moment where he hits him with the chair and Gorilla and Jesse's like, "It does nothing. Zeus is smiling at him. There's your hero, McMahon, in fear." It's just Jesse was just all over this.
Yeah, and they really did a good job making Zeus seem like a legit threat. I will say that.
Mm. Even though he had absolutely zero skills, I don't think he even knew how to get into the ring.
Right, yeah.
But Vince didn't care. I mean, he just wanted the guy to look imposing, and he did. I mean, he made Hogan look pretty weak going into this match. So, but for the match itself, I don't know. I thought it was good. I thought it was pretty solid. Nothing great. Crowd's hot. It seems like Tony's finally getting comfortable in his WWE skin.
I really like Tony in this match. This is another Hogan chaotic fun tag match similar to the year before. A lot of crowd heat. You know, and Savage was still obviously a manic worker at this point. Regardless of his character, he's still tremendous in the ring. So he carries this thing. Zeus is fine in his role for what it was. I had something else and I lost it. Go ahead.
The crowds, I remember Mark getting out, like, obviously still, I was still drinking the orange Kool-Aid. So I was with all of us and my friends in the living room, and I was marking out when Hogan came out alone and just got in Zeus's face, and it was just awesome. And, they try to slam him, and the only time they ever got the upper hand was when they raked his eyes, and, you know, you can always tell, you can always see Savage whispering in his ear, telling him what to do next. Mm-hmm. It's so funny. Obviously, more chicanery here. Sherry had a weighted purse, which Elizabeth got after flipping Sherry over the ropes because she got in the ring. Hogan grabs the purse, pastes Zeus in the face with it, kind of has him kind of dazed. Hogan finally slams him, drops the leg, and gets the cheap win.
Tony is just tremendous there.
That last 3 minutes might be some of the hottest crowd.
Yeah.
This Jersey crowd was off the chain on this night. I give them a lot of props. They makes this event even better than maybe on paper it was. I mean, they were just off the charts. And that last 3 minutes is unbelievable. And Jess and Tony's got that, like, Flair beats Harley in the cage sound in his voice, and Jesse's all pissed off, and just, everything's working here. Everything's working here.
Yes.
It doesn't matter that half these guys don't know what they're doing. It's just a great ending. The place is just – I mean, that crowd. I mean, man, that crowd is literally off the charts. Might be one of the loudest crowds we've had to date. in pay-per-view history to this point. I mean,
yeah,
his crowd is just off the charts. So that's it. And then they do their, you know, him and Beefcake do their posing. And
also what I love too was Savage's had swank white tights on in the show, which I liked.
Yeah, he never wore white that often. Yeah, no, he did. What, white? I think he had a yellow. I think he had orange boots. I think that was his combo.
No, I think it was all white. I'm pretty sure it was all white.
Did he have white boots too? Okay, I thought he had orange boots, but okay. Beefcake had his usual pink and white kind of tattered look, and obviously Hogan, the usual.
Now, do you think, you know, the more I think about this match, the more I'm fine with it, but do you think they would have been better off doing Hogan Savage here again for the title? Or even, like we had mentioned in our review, maybe Hogan, DiBiase, and then Beefcake Savage in a singles match?
Are you asking that on the impetus that Vince never brings Zeus in?
Or maybe just as like a bodyguard, just kind of, and then they use him in Survivor Series. You know, maybe here he's just in Savage's corner. Like, I mean, you know, one thought was Savage retains at WrestleMania, and then Hogan wins it here. They could have done that, or they could have just had Savage go for the rematch as well. I mean, the match ended up being pretty good, so I can't complain too much, but I'm just wondering if they could have done something more with the title here.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't have minded, you know, back then the only way you do a good rematch is putting them in a cage. So I could have seen this as a cage match with Zeus,
yep,
and then have DiBiase and or have you know, Beefcake and somebody else, maybe Beefcake DiBiase, and maybe put Snuka somewhere else. My only concern there is I'm glad they just kind of burned Zeus here and then started early, because as we get over the next three or four pay-per-views, I get a little nervous as to how long, you know, Vince decides to use Zeus, if you get my drift. And we'll get more about that when we look, when we get ahead to our next few pay-per-view casts. But, you know, I'm always a mark for a good cage match. So if they did do Hogan Savage in a cage, I'd be all for it. I think the match would have been probably pretty damn awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm fine with this. You know, Savage wasn't really in, I don't want to say he was in his right state of mind. In real life, I'm sure he was fine. It probably would have been a good match. I just get nervous as to what Vince would have done with Zeus later on down the line.
Right.
I'm kind of glad that they used him earlier and not later. And again, I love teasing our listeners to make us to listen again. But we'll get more into what they were thinking of doing with Zeus later on down the line. But I don't have a problem with this. I think the match is fine. I think it was a good hot. I don't think a good – I mean, if that ended up being the title match in the main event, this might have been one of the greatest SummerSlams ever, because all three matches involving the titles were all tremendous.
Yes.
So you would have had, you might have had 3 4- to 5-star matches, which might have made this an A+.
I mean, as is, it's definitely one of the top SummerSlams ever. I mean, the crowd is hot throughout. The commentary is very, very good.
Yep.
You know, the second half sags a little bit in-ring-wise, but heat-wise and storyline-wise, it's still up there. It doesn't really taper off that much. So, I mean, honestly, there's no wasted match on this show. Like, you know, the Dusty match, you're putting Dusty over. Perfect Rooster is short enough to not really matter, but it gets Perfect to win. The six-man matches, you know, didn't have too much feud behind them, a little bit, but still just very well-worked matches.
Right.
Valentine Hercules obviously advanced the Garvin stuff, that short 3 minutes. DiBiase, Snuka, you know, DiBiase needed a high-profile match. So, really, the card doesn't have any wasted, you know, you look at SummerSlam 88 and it's just a bunch of matches like a house show. This actually, you know, was woven throughout with good storylines and good characters. So, I mean, you can see how far, once again, this promotion has come since 1988 SummerSlam.
Yeah, I agree. Clearly, you know, there really isn't any fluff on the roster. Everybody was used properly. Obviously, SummerSlam 88, you know, you saw a lot of dead weight, and they, you know, Vince kind of knew the writing on the wall during that show, because there's really no dead weight here. Even the Valentine Hercules match with Garvin had something to it that was relevant.
Yep.
So there's the show. Overall, our final analysis. I knew you were gonna. I was gonna grade this probably a little higher than you, because this is one of my favorite shows of all time. This was my favorite SummerSlam of all time. For 9 years, and then one, and then another one replaced it, and we'll get to that one down the line. But this is definitely one of my probably 5 or 6 favorite pay-per-views of all time. I love the crowd. I really like Tony and Jesse's commentary. They were a little choppy, but I think it made them even funnier and more enjoyable to listen to. Maybe the match layout was a little off. I think they threw too much work rate at the beginning and not enough work rate at the end. But the crowd, I give big props to that North Jersey crowd. Mm-hmm. They were red hot and were hot for everything. And as you listen to that last clip, the end of that main event, they're just off the charts. They're jumping out of their skin. They're so crazed. It makes the show so much better. I love this show. I gave it an A-. Definitely a show to enjoy. And if you've never seen it, please recommend you throw it in. It really goes at it pretty fast. It's not really a long show. It doesn't seem very long.
Yeah, it flies.
Yeah, it goes at a really good pace. So it's not gonna bog you down.
I'm not too happy with my grade. Actually, I gave it a B+. But the more I think about it, I mean, it's definitely an A- show. I'm not. I guess maybe at the time I was a little torn because of the second half slowdown, but it really is one of my favorite shows as well. So let's quickly hit some feedback. We have a bunch of it this week about this show from our Place to Be Facebook page, and that's facebook.com/placetobepodcast. Yep. Jason Greenhouse, whenever I talk about this pay-per-view, one thing always comes to mind. On the live pay-per-view feed, while Mean Gene's interviewing Rick Rude and Bobby Heenan, the SummerSlam logo in the background fell. Gene turned around and says, "Ah, fuck it." Other memories include the Roddy Piper Bottoms Up interview, the amazing opening match between the Hart Foundation and Brainbusters, and my favorite match of the night has always been the Rockers and Tito versus Rougeaus and Rick Martel. So Jason's pretty much in line with our thoughts.
Yes. I think a lot of people kind of fall in line. I'm curious to see what the rest of our comments were. But yeah, I definitely agree with and you can't go wrong with that six-man tag. It really is a great match.
All right. And as always, Karen Polland.
The Hot Scott.
Checks in. Warrior Rude is the match of the night. The crowd was hot for that match. As you can tell, that a match has been built up properly when the crowd pops to the ring announcer saying it's up next. As silly as the idea was in execution, it was a good idea to keep Zeus out of the ring as he could clearly not work. Jesse keeps saying Zeus is smiling because Hogan can't hurt him, but I'm pretty sure Zeus is smiling because he was just having fun. Jesse's rant on Shivani for saying it's okay for Warrior hitting Rude with the belt is another highlight. So you can shoot a guy outside the ring and it's legal, you're stupid in the monsoon. I swear Tony was going to cry right then and there.
Corey... I've always thought he was going to cry.
He was great, though, on that show. Like we said, that main event, he was tremendous. Mm. Corey Ferreira. There's several matches that come to mind when I think about SummerSlam 89. First is the opening tag match between the Hart Foundation and Brainbusters, classic tag match between two great teams at the peak of their runs as a team. The next match is classic IC title match between Ultimate Warrior and Rick Rude, still one of the better Warrior matches. And like Rude, like WrestleMania 5, Rude carried Warrior to a great match. Lastly, the main event of Hogan and Beefcake against Savage and Zeus. Continuation of the Mega Power feud with a big promotion of No Holds Barred with Zeus's involvement. Still a decent tag match, though the Mega Power match from 88 is a better match. Also, never understood why Tony Schiavone announced this event or others. I think he was on the payroll and they just wanted to use him, probably. And as we talked about, he's good here and he's good at the Rumble, too. So, no complaints
from us. And honestly, Gorilla probably needed a breather. I mean, he was on TV nonstop, big shows. You know, Gorilla wasn't a young guy. He probably was either in his normal position at the entrance, or maybe Vince gave him the... I think they just wanted
to probably mix it up a little bit, too. I mean, they got Shivani, they're paying him, might as well use him.
Yeah, exactly, that too. But I also think they probably wanted to give him a little TV time off, so...
All right, Graham Cawthon comes to us. Hearts versus Brainbusters, possibly my favorite tag match ever. Shame they didn't also get to work a program against each other. Also, Warrior versus Rude is 100 times better than it ever should have been, and really groomed Warrior for the next level. Todd Weber, hot crowd, unreal opener, great IC match, Piper versus Rude would have rocked. Ronnie the ring announcer, the so-called yada yada, cracks me up, but the line reading is straight out of Small Wonder. It's a good reference there. And a main event that even the president from Fifth Element couldn't screw up, A+. And finally, William Aaron Kenny, the Mean Gene fuck it, best live mistake ever, even better than Booker T calling Hogan the Edward. I'd say they're both up there. For sure. And let's quickly run through. We got a bunch of feedback here from the history of WWE Facebook page. And that's
tremendous.
You can obviously just search that and pull it up. Our new home of the Place to Be podcast.
That's right.
William Harvey. Always did like Tony. He was a good play-by-play guy. Jason Vernon. It was my first full pay-per-view I ever watched. And one of the very few times Warrior had a good lengthy match with Rude for the IC title. Aaron Goins Jr. I will always remember the moment in the Hart Foundation Brainbusters match where Jim Neidhart and Arn Anderson collide in the ring. It's in that moment where Natalya Neidhart was conceived. It's a little known fact that the anvil is actually Natalya's mother, and Neidhart switched those baggy MC Hammer pants during the new Foundation in order to hide his saggy post-birth figure. All of that is a joke a friend of mine and I have made ever since watching that event a few years back. I say that sober-minded. It was so absurd that it stuck. And that is a pretty hilarious story. And Graham agreed because he said, that story's so good it will get in the podcast now, fair warning. And Aaron was happy about that. So good story, Aaron. We enjoyed that. That was pretty – made us both laugh. So,
God. I talked about Anvil's beer gut, but maybe it was a little bit of the – he was retaining water. I bet you better reason than have a beer gut.
Well, wait till like 91. He's like really, really.
Oh yeah, he's having triplets at that one.
Steve Bragg, referencing Graham, had posted the opening vignette of SummerSlam where they have like all the people doing summer activities, wondering if it was a young Stephanie McMahon eating the watermelon at 2:48. I'll have to check that out. Not sure. Hopefully someone can answer.
There's rumors that either she's eating the watermelon or she's the one that jumps in the pool. There's a girl that jumps in a pool, in a swimming pool too. Hmm. She might be that one as well. The okay. watermelon one is pretty good rumor. I don't think it's her though, but I remember the girl looking pretty close to her. But it's either her eating the watermelon or there's a girl that
she would have been. It could have been her. She would have been pretty young. She would have been 9 at the time. So I believe she's my age. So
She might be in the open. It wouldn't surprise me.
All right, Jason Oymet. Both six men tags got 4 feuds and 12 guys at pay per view payday, as well as pushing established feuds. Rockers, Rougeau's, Tito Martel, Andre and Hacksaw, Demolition, Twin Towers. Chet Zickowitz. When the SummerSlam sign fell, Mean Gene said "fuck it," LOL. Dennis Nunez, kind of bummed the Mean Gene blooper wasn't on the DVD. And Jake Papalardo, best SummerSlam ever, top to bottom. So great feedback there, guys.
Yes.
Continue to bring that to us, please. We will always let you know when we're doing the vault so you guys can get your thoughts, and we'll love reading them. It's fun to get everyone else's views as well. So
I don't know why they didn't put the Mean Gene "fuck it" on the thing.
I think I know why they didn't put it on.
Well, there. I know, but I mean, I guess they could have bleeped it, but I don't know. It just seems like it's part of, well, I guess the new audience, you don't want to offend them, but. I don't know. I think it's a part of WWE lore, but I guess you could put it in there.
Yeah, I agree. So let's we'll wrap things up from here. Next week we will be back. We're still debating if we do headlines or another kind of maybe a theme show next week. We'll see what we got cooking.
Well, let's see the weekend. The NBA finals will be
not too much more further.
A few games old.
Yeah. I think next week we should come up with a theme. Maybe we'll do one of our movie or yearly reviews or something. We'll come up with something good. So
yeah, the Stanley Cup Finals will only be 2 games old. In fact, Game 3 is on Monday night, so it'll be going on while we're talking. We might surprise people. I think we might throw a curveball next week.
Yeah, let's come up with something good. So, and then later in the week, of course, we'll wrap up the year in pay-per-view 1989 with Survivor Series. So
yes,
we'll go ahead
I'm looking forward to that because as Justin and I do, we usually play the open, and that's the awesome long giving thanks open with all those.
I like that card too because we get to do some fantasy booking on that because we both disagree with a lot of that card as far as who was used where. So that's always fun breaking down that card and kind of saying who should have been where. So
yep.
All right, so we'll wrap things up for them. We will see you next week. Of course, hit us up at the Facebook page for Place to Be Podcast or History of WWE and visit thehistoryofwwe.com for all your wrestling needs. And Scott, I want to wish you once more another happy birthday there.
Thank you.
And we'll wrap things up. My PIC, I'm Justin Rosero.
And we will and see quickly you. Before you go, we'll have to report Monday's podcast what goes on this weekend.
Yes, 2 more days until the Bachelor Party of the Century.
That's right. So there'll be plenty to talk about Monday. We don't even know what it'll be. So definitely stay
hopefully tuned. We'll be alive or not in jail. So.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So thanks for listening, guys. We'll talk to you next week.
Peace.